and welcome to yet another edition of Comfortably Unnumb, the official podcast of the Umbrella Society. My name is Blake Anderson. I am the host of this program, and I'm also the program's manager here at the Umbrella Society in beautiful Victoria, British Columbia, on the traditional unceded territories of the Algonquin-speaking people. And yeah, I'm very excited to be starting up season three of this podcast. This was something that I didn't think would be going into season three, but we've just had such overwhelming support and feedback that, you know, the stories that are being told on this program are, really making a difference and are incredibly inspirational. I love being able to bring on individuals and hear, you know, their recovery journey and what it took for them to get sober and get free and clear of substances. So this is something that I'm always inspired with these conversations, and I know that that's resonating with everybody who's listening and people in our community. So I'm happy to be keeping this going. Also, these are very exciting times for the Umbrella Society. We have recently moved locations down the road to 2675 Bridge Street. This is a much bigger, brighter space. I actually have a window in my office. You know, that's a real win for me. But just for, our clients and for, Umbrella and our programs, this has been a real game changer. We've been able to increase our counseling options. We've got a great group room and have been getting going on all of our groups. And looking to expand those. And we also have a drop-in program. We're calling it the Referrals and Documents Program, but this is where people can come in anytime during business hours, and they'll be able to meet with one of our staff in real time and get some substance use supports right away. So something about not having to wait for an appointment down the road, actually being able to, put pen to paper and get to work on their recovery goals is really encouraging. The fact that someone can come in and start working on, referrals for treatment centers or getting some advice on what their next steps may be, maybe just getting given a bit of the lay of the land when it comes to groups and programs and looking at those supports. The fact that people can leave these doors knowing that there is some momentum going in their recovery and that there's some options being presented to them. I think that's an incredibly empowering, piece. And this is a program that I we've already seen has tons of success, and I know that's going to grow. So yeah, drop into, our offices at any time and seek that support. Also this was a busy month for us. This is yet again, another September where, with Recovery Month, we have put out a big campaign where we have brought on individuals to be a part of our campaign, and their story and their faces are prevalent on our social media pages, but they're also they're plastered on a whole bunch of buses all around town. So it was incredible to just be driving down the street and seeing the face of folks in recovery promoting recovery and, really shedding light on the fact that recovery is possible. So this has been great. And I have the honor of bringing in a lot of the individuals that were part of our recovery campaign and interviewing them for this program. And today, really think we're starting off the season on the right foot by bringing this individual. We have a fellow by the name of Daryl who's going to be coming on and talking about his story. And Daryl is just an absolute joy to talk to. He's someone who has gone through his share of challenges in his recovery, but can speak so openly and candidly, about his journey and his struggles. So I find this a very inspirational individual. So really happy to have Daryl on the program to share his story. And you can expect in the weeks to come and the months to come that we'll be, shedding light on a whole bunch of our participants in this year's recovery campaign. Without further ado, Daryl. Okay, Daryl, thank you so much for taking the time to come in. This is the first time doing a podcast in our new office. So, and this is the first podcast of the season. So, thank you for kicking this off in fashion and style here.
Cool. I'm excited. This is actually kind of cool where you guys' new digs are.
Yeah, no, we're very happy with the new space. And, it's definitely better for our clients, and it's better better for, I think, all of our sanity. So, yeah, this is really nice. But yeah, like I said, we're new to this space. Yep. But you know, first podcast here, so this is the inaugural
run
through here,
season three.
Yeah, cool. And also, you know, thank you so much for being a part of our recovery campaign this year. Yeah, Daryl's face was up on the buses and on our social media, and yeah, definitely get out there. Was it a cool experience?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, because actually when I first got asked, it was you know, just come down, get my picture taken, and give a quote on what recovery means to me. And so I said sure, and so I came down, and the photographer lady was really funny and a good person to work with, and so they took the picture, and I just gave them a quote or two of something, you know, recovery based that meant something to me, and so it was a cool experience. And then a few weeks later was when I got the email saying, hey, you got any problems being on the side of a bus? And so my wife kind of thought it was pretty funny, and the kids thought it was pretty funny. But yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. It was pretty neat when it was actually my niece was the first one to see me. And I guess she was on her way to work. And I got a call from my sister shortly after that she just was stopped at a stoplight and turns, and she's like, there's her Uncle Daryl at the side of a bus for good things too. It wasn't bad things. Yeah. So yeah, no. And then after that, it was, you know, my golf buddies and my kids and stuff would, you know, send me pictures at random times. Hey, I just saw you. I just saw the bus I was on for the first time yesterday, actually out in Souk. I pulled in to try and get a picture of it, but it pulled away.
It's already gone.
Yeah. Wasn't that exciting for me. So, yeah, you know what I mean? No. But it was really cool to do. And I think it's just all about carrying the message, right? So
yeah,
it was cool.
Well,
it was fun.
You know, and it's been a really cool, this is the, you know, our third year doing the recovery campaign for September, but we've kind of kept on upping our ante, you know, and really trying to get out there. So, you know, I think the side of the bus is really cool. I think recovery is something that isn't celebrated or recognized as much. And you know, the world of addiction is always, it's really heavy. And a lot of times I think people forget to shine the light on the positives and the success stories, you know? So, you know, and that's, you know, again, part of what this podcast is about is to, you know, talk to folks who have gone through it and are on the other side and kind of sharing that story. So I appreciate you doing this too. We're kind of
definitely milking
the most out of you here.
let's do it. I'm ready.
That's
this
amazing.
Good.
Well, and this is really good for me too. A lot of the folks I bring on, I already know and have a personal relationship with. I'm always excited. Like, we just met for the first time a few minutes ago. And so this is always kind of exciting, inspiring for me too, to hear your story for the first time. So,
cool,
yeah, this is really great. You know, when we go about doing these stories, this is definitely your story to tell.
Yep.
But I always love to dive back a little bit and see kind of where addiction started kind of showing its face and have a little bit of a backstory.
Totally.
It's really up to you where you want to start. But, you know, where, you know, for you, does your story begin?
Yeah, well, it's I was thinking about this the other day because, like, I'm the youngest of eight. Eight kids in the family. And, you know, I mean, it's, I mean, there's alcohol. My mom was an alcoholic and, you know, there's alcoholism runs in our family, and addiction as well. So, I mean, I never actually, dealt with that or thought about that stuff. Okay. But then, I mean, it was just a year and a half ago, I started seeking outside help beyond the NA walls and saw a counselor and got to deal with some stuff, I guess, from my childhood and things that I carried around with me. So, you know, for me, I'm always trying to be a better version of myself. And she took me back through the early days of, you know, the things that, you know, I mean, back in the day, your parents, you know, my mom beat the shit out of us because that's what she did when that was discipline back then, right?
It's normalized at this point.
Yeah. I didn't hold anything. She was still my mom. Yeah. But I guess that was part of, I guess I had suppressed it all my life.
Okay.
You know, I talk with other members of my family. Again, I'm the youngest, but you know, some people have forgiven her for it. Some people have not and have moved for it. I just learned to accept it.
Okay.
It's over. My mom passed away a long time ago, so it's not something I'm going to carry around with me.
Right.
It was pretty neat for me because she was just towards the end of her life when I got clean. Mm-hmm. And so she used to be part of my, I used to go visit her on Tuesday nights so that my dad could go to crib and see her in the home. And she'd always, are you still clean? Are right. you still off right. the dope? Yeah. And it was, so it was a really cool part of my early recovery times.
Okay. That reconnection.
And that she was still alive to share that, you know, with me. So,
right.
you know, when I go back and look at the early, I guess that was the, you know, I'm sure everybody grew up with some shit that they went through.
Sure.
But I didn't really see it or know that it was going to be part of my addictive story.
Okay.
Until, like I said, I reached out for some outside, which is something that I recommend to people as well, because, right. you know, the programs and stuff are great, but these counselors today right. now are just absolutely amazing. So.
And you're totally right there. You know, I think there are certain things that we carry around with us that we don't realize that we're carrying around with exactly. us until we really go there and have the courage to explore there, right?
So, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I think, I mean, in childhood and everything growing up, I think I was the same as most people, you know what I mean? It was just, you know, you get into the light stuff when you're 12, 13, you know, and then you start drinking as a kid and the weekend warrior shit and
right.
Nothing... abnormal in my story back in those days.
Right. So you kind of normal, you know, coming of age, yeah. teenage story.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. You
right.
know, the booze and the dope and just carry on.
Are you from Victoria or?
Well, I was born in Toronto.
Okay.
And I lived in Toronto till I was about 12. And so I moved out here with the family when I was 12. I'm turning 60 this year, so okay. it was a while ago, Blake. But
okay.
Yeah, so that was where I'm originally from. Been in Victoria, been in Colwood, Langford, Souk area,
okay.
pretty much all my life. And,
gotcha.
And raising my kids out there. And right. Love it. Love it.
Right. So kind of teenage years, you know, nothing really outside of the norm in yeah. that sense. Right. So it's not, yeah, you're just kind of the
weekend
stuff.
Well, I go
stuff.
Hard. Do you right. know what I mean? Like, yeah. even though it was just, you know, the booze and the weed, it was every day, you know, okay. with the, and it was on the weekends. It was just the way it was back in those days. And, but it didn't lead or it wasn't taking me down a path, that eventually my wife and I went down, and then that's when everything led to the dark times and the right. the true addiction and pain and stuff like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, you kind of got through your high school years,
yep.
you know, relatively unscathed or,
yes.
you know, or kind of, yeah, within the kind of...
Yeah.
So when did you kind of start recognizing that, you know,
yeah, when things went sideways,
yeah, when they start, yeah.
Well, it's actually, I mean, I guess I was 42 or something, like 20, you know, 18 years ago, 19 years ago. And the what it was a lot was my wife, who was an addict as well, we went down the road together. Her dad was an alcoholic, and so she wasn't much of a drinker and didn't really like to drink. So the, you know, the parties and stuff like that, you know what I mean? She didn't really like to go or the social gatherings because she wasn't much of a drinker. And like for me, you probably noticed, Blake, I can walk into a room of 30 people and know every person by the time right. I walk out. I can talk.
Gregarious.
Right, yeah, I got the gift of gab. Yeah. I'm comfortable talking to people. But with her, you know, she didn't quite have the same self-confidence. So we didn't go to a lot of the social gatherings. We didn't go to the parties that I, you know, wanted to and stuff. And then eventually it was a friend of mine and his wife who it was cocaine that took me to the drug of choice that took me out. And it was the drug that my wife could come out of her shell and right. and socially, you know what I mean? She could be the life of the party and be able to talk to everybody like I could.
Right. So it's and the social lubricant that worked for her.
Great.
Whereas alcohol
yep.
what is for most people, this the right.
Exactly.
This was for her. This is her way to
exactly. Yeah. You know, the booze wasn't it, but once this hit, it was,
this is,
know,
this is in early 40s then. So this is,
yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah. And it was awesome at the beginning. Like,
right.
unfortunately, that's, yeah. you know, the unfortunate part is that we found something that we thought was cool and we thought everything was great and we didn't know anything about what's going to happen. We just kept doing it and doing it.
And before this for you, alcohol was just kind of the
A few. Yeah, I can, you know, I'd have a couple. I wasn't, the alcoholism, I don't think for me was the biggest issue. It was the drugs.
Right. Okay.
And it was every weekend and it was, like I said, the sad part was in the beginning, it was fun.
Right.
And, you know, just kept going about that for a couple of years. And then, it wasn't until my buddy and his wife split up and moved away, and then it was on our dime. Then it was, that's when you could, or I could send, then we were heading, we were out of control. It's like we were walking down this road, heading down a hill. Hmm. We didn't realize how fucked up the road was until we were at the bottom looking up going, I can't walk back up that hill anymore. And it was like, we owned a house, you know, it was, we couldn't make our mortgage payments. And, you know, you could see we're starting to spend all the money on. So
there's the stability that you kind of have in your life, and you're seeing it slowly start to get infiltrate deteriorate because of the substances.
And the tough part was the harder we tried to stop, the more we used. I was talking to somebody just the other day, and I mean, I used to use today to fight yesterday's pain. You know, I fucked up yesterday and just spent my mortgage money. Well, now I feel like shit. How do I get rid of that pain? I know, use again. And now you're twice as fucked. And it just, that's the road that we kept going down.
The guilt and shame spiral.
Shame spiral. Okay. Exactly. And then it wasn't long after that we had to sell the house because we couldn't make the mortgage payments. And, you know, then we sniffed $35,000 up our nose fairly quickly in 6 months. And we lived in rented a nice house. That's where... Then eventually we couldn't afford that, and we rented a shit house. And, you know, it's just how low are you going to go? And we just kept going down and down. And even at those times, Blake, I don't remember. It wasn't as bad at the moment as I sit and talk to you now. Right, you know, like we're just living it.
Yeah.
Not even though we knew we were fucked up.
You didn't have that context.
Had no idea what to do. Okay. Just kept using. What?
And were you still holding down jobs at this point?
Yeah.
Okay. Which is really challenging too. You know, I always see sometimes that being able to be a functioning addict is sometimes more challenging because you can kind of keep on getting on with things, right? That bottom doesn't hit as quickly, or as rapidly, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, again, I was a cabinet maker and I was really good at what I did. So I didn't have an 80-hour paycheck the last 2 years that I worked for the company. Like, but I was so good at what I did, they allowed me to, he's not going to be in Friday. He's not going to be in Monday. And they never fired me. Right. And so I just kept going down that road. Just I'll be there when I get there and when I'm not. And, you know,
they take for you as much as they could get you.
Exactly. They'd rather have me part-time than not at all. And so
you know, you're getting challenged by your employer, essentially. Yeah,
never. Yeah. And if he did, you know, say something, I'd go home. Which is exactly what I wanted to do anyway. So yeah, there were no repercussions of the pain yet.
Right.
You know what I mean? We just kept going, just kept going. And then, it was, that's once the pain started to kick in. And I remember, cause it was always my wife and I together. Do you know what I mean? I didn't use separately and she didn't use. It was
kind of code.
It was our thing, you know, just like people with their booze. You know what I mean? We'd sit up and talk till 6 a.m. and, you know, get up at noon as parents. But it wasn't until, and I remember towards the end, I remember I had myself convinced Like I'd be high, she'd go to bed and I'd be high as fuck. And I'd be like, you know what? I just want to end it. And I had myself convinced that the kids would be better off with one, if I ended it, she'd have to get her shit together. And the kids would be better off with one good parent than two fucked up ones.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And I remember that vividly. I remember looking at the chandelier going, maybe do it that way. And I'm like, I'd just fall down and hurt myself. You know what I mean? And
so this is right. The
progression of the brain.
And how old were your kids at the time?
Let's see. At that time, that would have been 18 years ago. So I got four boys.
Okay.
Yeah, I got four boys. One's 40, one's 38, one's 29, and one's 24. And so do the math, you know what I mean? One didn't live with us, older one lived with us in a room. He's an addict as well. And then the two younger ones were younger. So, you know what I mean? Six and 11 or whatever they were. But, you know, I mean, for the most part, we had food in the cupboards, you know. Parents like you're getting up at noon. You know what I mean? I don't look back. I've seeked help and I've forgiven myself.
Right.
And my family and my kids have forgiven me. So
These
are, I'm able to share these moments with you, Blake, without it taking me to a painful place because it's what I did.
Yeah.
I can accept what I did.
Right.
But eventually, God had a plan and he came along it was weird because my mom was in a home, my dad was moving into my sister's basement, and a family member that I had used with many times, he came to help move. Only there was something different about him, and he was 6 months clean. He'd been going to the Narcotics Anonymous program, and I remember I could see it in him, like something looked way cooler, right?
Yeah.
And I remember saying to him as we're doing the deliveries and moving him, and I'm like, what happened to you?
Right.
And he's like, I go to Narcotics Anonymous. I'm like, what the fuck is that? And he says, why don't you come with me? There's a meeting Thursday nights in Souk. And so he was the one that took me to my first ever meeting, and I didn't,
What the power is of having someone that you know or that you respect, who has kind of started to make that progress, right? And you can kind of see
and
that,
you see it.
Desire it, right? Okay, exactly. I want
what he has.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
He was so awesome because at the time, he's taken me to meetings. And I'm still smoking, a soft drug. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling him, that's okay, though. Because, I don't wait up till 2 in the morning for my weed dealer to show up. You know what I mean? It's okay. And he's like, yeah, whatever. Whatever you know what I mean?
So
like,
he wasn't driving that hard line of how you're supposed to do it. He was, right. That's
still
pretty
picking
cool.
me up, taking me to the meeting, dropping me off afterwards. My wife was sitting at home, still smoking pot and not going to meetings, and I'm so fucking egotistical that I'm like, you stay home, I'll go get clean for the both of us. Like, how fucked,
And so at this point, you guys were kind of attempting sobriety from
cocaine, right? You know what I mean? And that's the part that for 2 years, I kept relapsing I got to 30 days twice, got that first tag, and then I remember taking my green tag. I went out on the 58th, but I still, and it must have been so hard. I'm friends with people now that were there that opened the door before me. Mm-hmm. It was so hard for them to just see me, anybody come back from a relapse and everybody looks over and there's Daryl's hand up in the air again. Right. And, but it was part of my story. It was part of, I wasn't ready yet.
Right.
And, so I kept going to the meetings and my wife didn't. And I kept relapsing for about 2 years, went through four or five sponsors because it was always them, not me.
Yeah.
And then finally it was two things. April 14th, 2008 is my clean date.
Okay.
And on April 14th, 2008, I came home and I coached football. Kids football, both of my kids played.
Okay.
And so I came home, I got home 3 o'clock, kids walking in at the same time, going to get ready for football. I go to flick the light on and the light doesn't come on. I thought, the bulb's blown. Went upstairs and went to turn the light on there and that didn't work and it was cold. The hydro had been shut off. And It was, that's, I'm phoning Hydro. I remember phoning Hydro, like, you can't shut my Hydro off. Right. I've got kids. And yeah, that was it. You know, the reality was, I love my dope more than I love my kids.
Right.
And that's the hardest fucking thing for a dad to ever face. But that's what I faced on April 14th, 2008.
Right.
And that was my rock bottom.
Yeah.
The next day, my wife joined me in recovery.
Wow.
And okay. She got a sponsor.
So that was a wake-up call for her too then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That was the end. We had to actually, her parents lived across the street in the co-op that we lived in.
Yeah.
And we came clean. You know, we'd been borrowing money off them for years to pay our rent. And
okay. So yeah, like I didn't really ask that. Yeah. But yeah. Like, I mean, as far as what everybody else knew, this, you hadn't kind of come up to anybody, and it wasn't like this outward thing, even with the big family.
We hid it.
Right.
Right. We hid it.
So it was this silent. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was my oldest boy. He kind of knew, you know what I mean? Like he was kind of just, I remember there being times where he was disgusted in me about just behaviors.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That I would show. But yeah, no, that actual day on April 14th, my wife and I went over to her parents, came clean. Wow. We had to spend the night in their house because my house wasn't warm enough for my kids to sleep in. Okay. Face that as a dad, okay. You know what I mean? That was the toughest day. And that was when shit got real.
Okay.
And, yeah, no, when you, so April 14th,
when you went over, was that like, did it feel, that must have been super challenging, but was it liberating in a certain way too, to kind of get that out there? Like,
well, my wife, you know, I'm always the overbearing one, I guess, if we want to call it that. Sure. And my wife's the quiet one, but she did it while I was at football practice. She came home from work and she went over and prepared her parents, which was probably the hardest thing she's ever had to do in her life.
Okay.
But she let them know. And then I went over there afterwards. We spent the night there. We actually kind of called for our own intervention where we needed, and we came clean. I think it was 2 days later on the weekend, and we had my oldest kid there. My sister called. We basically came out and told everybody what the fuck's been going on.
Right.
And we needed to surround ourselves, call us out on our own shit.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
And let everybody know around us.
Yeah.
I believe Lisa and I, that's my wife, we even signed a paper saying, you know, if Lisa used, then she's going to have to leave and I'll stay with the kids. And if I use, you know what I mean?
Like, right. Okay.
We started to protect ourselves from ourselves.
Right.
Right. So, yeah, no, I was thinking about it today as I was driving here, Blake. Like my mother-in-law, it was so, I got paid. I mean, I'm a 43-year-old grown man and I would get my paycheck and I would have to go and hand my paycheck, cash it and hand it over to her.
Right.
And she would give us some money for groceries or she would give it. You know what I mean?
Yep. Like, so you're there was no trust in yourselves anymore.
Right. We had to protect ourselves from ourselves.
Wow.
And, you know, that's what, thank God, you know, that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And there were times, there was a time like Friday nights were obviously a struggle for us. So I remember that I think the first Friday night I went and spent the night at a members, an NA member, an older guy, slept on his couch and just to be away from my wife so that we could get through that Friday night. And Saturday nights we went and spent the night at my sister's house because she was aware of it. And
so you're starting to put in all these safety
plans
essentially for yourself
and
following through on. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
hard to do.
That's
humbling.
You know, my sponsor that got me clean at that time was a tough ass. And he, you know, I kept coming back and I love it. You know, I love the welcome back and the hugs for everybody. Mm-hmm. I needed somebody to tell me to, why don't you fucking stay? And he called me out and he said, you know, he says, you're a fucking drug addict that steals from your children. And as much as that was the hardest thing to hear and I wanted to punch him in the face, it's true. Right. And he pushed me. He's like, you know, to do the steps. And he pushed me to do all the things that I needed to do. And, you know, it was exactly what. And he summed it up. I still to this day, my desire to use was stronger than my desire to stay clean.
Right.
Black and white of it.
Okay. Right?
Things changed on April 14, 2008.
Right.
My desire to stay clean got stronger than my desire to use.
Right.
So, however I got there, it doesn't matter. I don't regret any of the pain and the stuff, Blake, because that's what made me who I am today.
Right. Absolutely.
Right.
No, and I think, you know, I think a lot of times, I think that early recovery, I don't think a lot of folks have that same sort of experience where they can, you know, because I think a lot of times you can really get taken out by regret and looking back at all the things that you've, you know, lost or all the things that has happened and kind of get into that, really, you know. So for you, you're like, hey, this is how make me who I am, and this is where I am moving forward. That's a really healthy way to be looking at it. So that must have been really helpful for your recovery.
It was, you know, he pushed me to do the steps. That was the one thing that I had never done in the 2.5 years of putting my hand up, relapse.
You're showing up for the meetings, but
I could talk. As you can tell, I got no problems talking. Yeah. It was the listening and fucking putting the plan in motion that there seemed to be a disconnect. But he'd, what question are you on? I don't know. 25. He says, well, I want 5 more done by tomorrow. Okay. I said, I'm fucking tired, dude. I just finished working. You were never too tired to use. Let's go. And it was that push that I hated at the fucking time. but it's
he was putting you through your paces.
It's exactly what I needed. Right. And then I remember one day after I took my blue tag, I took my 6-month tag, and my dad died. And the addict came right fucking back. And I remember I'm going out like my dad died. Like I'm going to get a free pass here. Everybody's going to understand.
Right.
I got a free one. Fuck
all of a sudden that.
Yeah. That addict that is right back. Like, oh, yeah. He's found like, it, let's found go.
An
angle.
I found an opening.
That's right. Let's go. And but again, my desire to stay clean was stronger than my desire to use. And I'd learned enough, been through enough. So what I did was I called my oldest kid and I said, hey. You know, a Papa died. I need help. So we went out for dinner.
Yeah.
We went to a movie. And I remember it's like 11:30 at night and I'm driving home and I still want to use. I remember I'm bawling my eyes out, Blake, because I don't want to use, but I want to use.
Right.
And so I called my sister. Where my dad lived in her basement. And I said, I'm crying. Like, I don't want to use, but I want to use. And she goes, you know what? Papa was so proud of you and what you did. Don't let it be his death that takes you back out there.
Right.
Like, think of how proud he was of you.
Right.
And it was like, I remember, hung up from her and I called my wife, who was my partner in crime. She was always ready to go. And I'm like, I want to use. She goes, then don't fucking come home. I'm like, how'd you get so tough? All of a sudden.
So you didn't have that wing person, right?
No wingman there. And, I remember getting home. And I remember hugging her, and I remember bawling my eyes out and waking up the next day clean and made it through. And I remember going to a meeting that night because I needed a meeting. Hmm. And it was hard because there was a guy taking like a 30-year cake and a guy taking a 2-year cake. So I don't want to bring the party down. You know, I don't want to be but they knew. Right. There was a fella that knew that my dad had died. And it was at the near the very end, and he just said, Daryl, do you got anything to share with us? And here it fucking comes, right?
Wow. I'm
bawling my eyes out, and I'm just saying, my dad died, and I don't know what to do, and I'm fucked up, and I'm hurting, and I don't want to use, and just raw emotion, right? And after the meeting was over, I'm outside. I used to smoke cigarettes back then, and I'm outside having a smoke, and there was a lady that I'd seen at the meetings quite a few times, never talked to her. Anyway, she came up to me and she gave me a hug and she said, you know what, man? She said, when my dad died, I went back out and used and I lost custody of my kids and I never got them back. So hang in there, bud. Like, hang in. And she gave me a big hug.
Yeah.
And then right after that, there was a guy standing there and he came up to me and he said, you know, when my dad died, I went back out and I lost my wife. I lost my kids. I lost everything. I never got it back. So. Be strong.
That's
and
powerful.
It's hearing what you need to hear, right?
Right.
So I made it through that night and that experience. And after that, Blake, you know, I mean, my mom passed away 2 years later. I've had a brother pass away. Death is a part of the, what you have to do.
Right.
And you push through the times. As a matter of fact, it was my my oldest brother, I just passed away like last year. And on my, like, I go to the Thursday night. That's my home group, okay, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, I get the news that he had passed away at like dinner time on Thursday. And right at that point, a buddy of mine called and said, hey, come to the meeting tonight. I said, I don't think so, man. I'm pretty shook up. You know what I mean? This is what happened. And I sat there and I thought, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going to go to the meeting.
Right.
And I went to the meeting.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's so much that I needed some sympathy and the hugs, even though it was nice. But I also needed to show the newcomer that, look, my brother died, but I'm still here sharing it with you guys. Right. Because help me get through this.
Right.
And we can together get through this.
That solidarity piece and that right commitment to the.
So it's hopefully somebody took that home with them.
Sure.
And you know, they can push through the tough things that we have to push through in our life. Because early recovery ain't fucking easy.
No, right.
Right?
Right.
So it's I'm blessed to be where I am with what I have. I've made it through the tough times. I was saying to you earlier, I still go to the meetings now because I like to give back to the program that they gave to me.
Right.
I know I wouldn't be here without it.
Yeah.
But yeah, the like I sponsor people and seeing someone else, you know, I love going to the meetings now because I still am working on myself. Right. I may not have the struggles with the dope. I don't have the urges to use anymore. But I always want to be a better person for my family, for my kids, for myself. And I also, you know, the newcomer is the most important person to me. I love seeing a newcomer come in. I love seeing it when they're there again next week. I love hearing, I've heard the stories of, you know, I was going to use, but instead I called Buddy and there's his buddy sitting there and I made the right decision. Like, I fucking love that shit, man. Right. You know, that's why I still go to the meetings. That's why I'm so passionate about, you know,
seeing people start to build momentum in their journey, in their recovery.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's, you know, if we're all there to help each other, like people were there to help me.
Right.
You know, and where would I be without them? So it's pretty cool, man.
No, I always say that's the biggest strength of the rooms and the program is that community, right? And that sense of connection. And like you say, hearing other people's experience, you know, there's something it's validating, but it's also, it gives you that strength as well. You know, like that's interesting that you brought up, you know, this folks who said, hey, I went out during these hard points and this is what, you know, just hearing that is that reinforcement almost, right?
Oh,
through other people's stories and you can build off each other and right. Yeah.
You know, and it's, you know, it's so hard. Like I said, in the early recovery, it's so hard, you know, people tell you to phone, you know, here's a phone list, phone me, you know what I mean? Phone. And it's fucking hard to pick up the phone and call somebody you don't even know. And, you know, cause in your mind, you don't want to bug them. Yeah. Hey, you don't want to bug them. For me, it was pretty funny. Cause I was at a meeting downtown, which I didn't go to the downtown meetings very often. And they gave me a phone list. And one of the guys after the meeting says, hey, that's my number right there. He says, I dare you to fucking call me. I dare you. And you know me, I'm such an egotistical, competitive fuck. I'm like, okay. As soon as I got home.
I'm calling this guy.
As soon as I got home, I phoned this guy. I said, hey. He goes, hey. I said, it's Daryl from the meetings. He goes, hey. I said, you dared me to phone you. He says, that's right. I said, well, here I am phoning you. He goes, maybe it won't be so hard the next time.
Right. Interesting.
And I thought, what a cool message. You know what I mean? I've shared it a few hundred times at meetings. Nobody's ever called me Blake, but that's okay.
Yeah.
But just those are the things that we pick up together. You know, I hope we're talking, you know, I hope somebody hears this. And if one person hears something that, you know, can help them in their journey. You know, I speak of the Narcotics Anonymous program because that's how I got clean.
Right.
We are there for each other, and I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the people ahead of me that cared for me and showed me the way until, you know, loved me until I could love myself and stuff.
Right.
I love my clean date, April 14th. It's my Christmas, man. It is I keep myself pretty humble the rest of the year. But on that day, I do the same thing every year. I get up in the morning. I'm always up before anybody else. I'm up 5 o'clock. I have my morning cup of tea and I sit there. And Blake, I take myself back to April 14, 2008. I take myself back to the pain, the shame, and the guilt, and I allow myself to feel it, right? Mm. Feel the fucking disgust, the shame, the pain, and everything. And I allow myself to feel it. And then I start to think about the different overcoming my dad's death. Mm-hmm. I think about overcoming my mom's. I think about all the different changes that I've made over my life, the better person. You know, the steps aren't just about, you know, staying away from the dope. The steps help me be a better person, help me be a better father, help me be a better husband. Right. You know what I mean? Friend.
Yep.
So I start to think of that. My 1 year cake, because I went to so many people's 1 year cake and I wanted one so bad, but I kept fucking relapsing. So it took me 3 years to get one. But on my 1 year cake, my 8 year old son gave me my medallion.
Wow.
Like that's not a dry eye in the house. Right. Now he's 24. You know what I mean? He works with me and he'll listen to this thing too, just to see what Pops is saying. But, but you know, it was just, my family's been a part of the journey and, you know, I forgive myself. My kids have forgiven me. God forgave me. It's a great life once you just keep pushing through those tough times, man.
Right.
And they're tough.
Well, I think you bring up such a powerful point about, you know, getting through those tough times sober and finding those other ways to cope and other strategies. You know, I think, when we've had this natural coping mechanism for so long and that's what we lean on, all of a sudden, you know, without that, man, that's really challenging. And it challenges who you are as a person really at the end of the day. It really gets down to the core of who you are and that amount of conviction. But it's got to have been that, I love how that's, you know, that turning point, getting through something like that, man, if you can weather that storm, then I can weather all these other small storms that are coming up, right?
You
know, so those successes, you know, big or small, that gives you the confidence to know that, hey, I can cope with life.
That's right.
When something comes our way, which we know what's going to come our way. We know that
you don't know when. You don't know. I didn't know how strong my foundation, like how strong my recovery was.
Right.
Until that happened.
And until it rocks you.
Right. And you could go years for not knowing until something, you know, unforeseen happens to you. But the bottom line is, and I love it, what my sponsor said was, you know, my desire to stay clean was stronger than my desire to use. Right. And it's because of the steps that I did, because of the pushing that he did. It's actually really cool. Last year when I celebrated I hadn't seen my sponsor. I moved on to a different sponsor. You know what I mean? The tough hand worked in the early recovery, but I needed
there's a time
more,
and a place.
More love. Yeah, that's right. And that's fine. But I hadn't seen the man in 10, 12 years. And on my clean date last year, on my 15th, I go into, I'm about to go into a store and I look over and there he is standing there.
Oh,
and it was the coolest. I walked over to him. He gave me a hug. And as he's hugging me, I said, I'm 15 years clean today because of you. And it was, and he hugged me again and it was so powerful. You know what I mean? Because even though I haven't seen him, his recovery, you know what I mean? Gave me the strength to have my recovery. And, you know, our higher powers are connecting and I'm going through, I think I told you, I'm really, my son just completed treatment, my 38-year-old.
Okay.
And, you know, the Umbrella Society had something to do with that as well. And he now lives with me and he now, has his recovery and his counseling and his meetings. And man, I'm just so grateful for, you know, for all the gifts that Narcotics Anonymous has given to me.
Right.
And that's why we're sitting here, man. At least that's why I think we're doing this, right?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I always think of like the gifts of recovery and, you know, I always say that, you know, there's one thing that, you know, going through addiction does give you is it forces your hand to figure out who you are.
Yeah, it does.
And it forces you to continue to work on yourself and keep honest with yourself. So, you know, I a lot of people never get to that point, you know?
Right.
And so I think that for me is huge. And it sounds like, you know, I see you as someone who understands that, you know, thoroughly, and the fact that you're still going to meetings and still you know, hey, a year and a half ago, starting up counseling and knowing, hey, there is still work to be done.
Yep.
I think there's a lot of times where, you know, and I see that when people, you know, in early recovery make that mistake going, I've been doing this for a year. I'm good. Yeah. I've got this sorted out.
Yeah.
Right. And, that's, you know, tough. The fact that you kind of leaned into it and continued to lean, yep, into it, you know, that's a testament to where you're at in your recovery. And that's, yeah. That's,
well, it's humility. You know what I mean? You got to stay humble. I had, I own a business and life was so good. And then about 4 years ago, there was a legal grow op rented the place beside me and it caught fire and took me out with it.
Oh, wow.
And you know what? I remember my chest was out and I had a bunch of money in the bank and I thought life was so cool. Right. And it was almost like God said, you know what, dude? Have a seat.
Right, right.
And fucking everything went sideways and I lost, you know, we lost everything.
Right.
And I remember, I mean, it wasn't a thought to use, but I remember like, fuck, what am I going to do now? And I'm standing there watching it burn down at 7 o'clock in the morning. And by 11:30 that same day, I had found another little small place that I could rent. And okay, we'd build them at one place and, or cut them at one place and cleared out my garage and we'd truck them to my garage and build just the things, right, you had to do to be strong and keep pushing forward. So right,
that, you know, resiliency has gotten to a point, yeah, where, yeah,
you gotta,
yeah,
be, what are you gonna do? I can bang my head against the wall and cry about it. It's not, yeah, gonna, right, you know, it's not gonna solve anything. It's, right, it's, we gotta do some work here. So, you know, if I learned all of that through the program and through the steps,
right,
the steps are the ones, you know, those are the things that I am so grateful for, that I'm able. I just saw a kid yesterday. It's cool. This cool, quick, cool story.
Yeah.
So I coach, when I was coaching football and still using his stuff, his dad used to drop by and drop a bunch of beers off for the coaches, right? Mm. He didn't come in and just, here you go, guys.
Right.
And I got to know the fella. And anyway, he's a guy that I borrowed $600 from because, you know, he was a nice guy and he loaned me money so I could pay my rent. And anyway, I got clean. The man passed away. And so I never got a chance to pay him back the money that I owed him. And so, you know, I'm moving along in my recovery and I can't make amends to a fellow who had passed away. Yeah. But I tell you, man, God is great. I get a phone call from his son, who's now 18, who's going to play football. And he messaged me and says, hey coach, would you like to sponsor me? I made the team and there's partial sponsors for as low as $100 or whatever, you know, if there's anything. I'm like, dude, how much is a full ride? Yeah. He says $600.
No.
To the penny. I just saw the kid, wow, yesterday. So we were talking about it. He never knew. He knew that I sponsored him, but he never knew that I owed his dad money.
Okay.
And $600, man.
Wow.
So I took the full ride and I was able to pay that debt back. And,
right,
you know,
right,
that's, what a way that, to do that's that our too, higher powers connecting and right, looking out for it. So, yeah, right, oh, amazing. I just had the conversation yesterday, so I thought I'd bring that up.
That is so
chatting
cool
with you. Yeah, yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah, it's pretty cool, man.
No, so I, you know, obviously now a veteran who's still kind of going in, you say you yep, have sponsees and you're kind of, you know, yep, giving back and loving to see kind of new people come in and stick, yep, with the program, obviously. And you have your son as well. That's probably your, yeah, your, that, you know, able to help kind of through these,
yep,
rough
sort of
early times. Yep. Right. Yeah. So, you know, for me, what do you say to the newcomers? What do you say to those guys that are just on that precipice of making that change, or you can just see that they yeah, want it, but maybe they're not quite at that place yet, or yeah, you know, what's your message?
You know, it's always the same message, at least that was said to me, is keep coming back.
Okay.
Because if I didn't keep coming back through all my struggles and my relapses and my tough times, I wouldn't have made it to where I am today.
Right.
So it's always the keep coming back. But then I remember vividly, because I was sitting in the chair, shooting my mouth off, going to the meetings.
Mm.
But the difference for me was, I remember there being a meeting. It was a guy's cake, I think his 8-year cake. And he always, you know, promoted the steps, do the steps. And he's just trying to say, do the steps. But I swear the guy is looking right at me and said, do your fucking steps. That's the way I heard it.
Yep.
And I did my fucking steps. And, you know, there's right. so much that you learn about yourself in there. It's you're writing it down. You're sharing it with another human being. You're sharing it with someone that you trust that will help you through these tough times, help build your foundation so that my foundation was strong enough. You know what I mean? Right. When it was my dad died and stuff. And I get to share that with other people, like with my sponsees. And I get to see them, you know, push through. And I remember saying the first sponsee I had, you know, and I'm trying to get him to do his steps and he's not ready yet. And so we kept going to the meetings and finally we were at he called me on a Sunday and he's at his rock bottom and he wants to go use. And so I told the wife, I got to go. And we took him to a Esquimalt. I sat with him at Timmy's. We went to meeting on the Sunday night and I could hear people talking and he's sitting beside me and I could see the tears coming out of his face. The reality had finally gotten enough. Right. And it was after that meeting, he didn't share at the meeting, but that's, you know, that was when the rubber hit the road. Yep. Right. Yep. And after that, we went to McDonald's and he looked at me and he said, I want to do my steps. And the next day he started his steps and his, you know, he got serious. It was that moment that he needed. And now, like I said, he's 6 years clean. He's a great dad to his kid and he's got a fantastic partner. She's just awesome. And just the gifts of recovery. Right. But he did the work.
Right.
And unfortunately,
I guess you said he continued to show up even when he was struggling, when he wasn't ready.
Yep.
And then something hit him. Right. Yep. So you never know when that light bulb moment is, but if you're not putting yourself out there, it's not
just right. keep coming back. Right. Eventually, hopefully you get, I don't regret any of the pain, shame and guilt. Cause it made me who I am today.
Yeah.
But if I didn't keep coming back, we're fucked. You know?
Right.
I guess the other thing too is rely on your brothers and your sisters. You know, right. when we as the people that have been around say phone us and call us if you're struggling, do right. it.
Yeah.
I don't say it to people just because it's something to say. I right. say it because I want to save your fucking life.
Right.
Right. Like right. people did for me. Take yeah. your recovery serious.
Right.
We're there for you. We can't help you if we don't know.
Yeah.
Right. But if you reach out to me, I'll take you for coffee. I'll go right. hang with you and try and, you know what I mean? Show right. you that life is worth living. So,
yeah.
you know, those are the cool things that I hope to see with, you know, like I said earlier, I love it when I see a newcomer at the meeting and the next week I see him there again.
Right.
Because he's on the right path. And
something is sticking. Something is resonating.
Yeah. 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 It's cool. That's right. that's what I love about the recovery for me. It's not about me. Right. So much anymore, Blake. It's about yeah. the people that I can maybe help on their journey.
Giving back to that, right. That kind exactly. of keeping that circle going.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. yeah. Thank yeah, God for the people that were there for me, right?
Right. Yeah. So well, and cool. I think that phone call, you know, that story you told about the fella daring you to make that phone call. I think that's awesome. So cool. And it's something that we talk about a lot. How getting used to having those phone calls when you're doing okay. And if you're yeah. used to calling people and picking up that phone and making those connections when you're doing all right, so much easier when you're in the shit and you're really yep. struggling to pick up that phone.
That's
and
right.
I think a lot of times people wait until they're at that moment of like despair. That yep. is going to, that phone is going to be really fucking heavy.
Yeah.
Right. But if you can get used to picking up that phone and making those connections
yes.
in the earlier yep. times, then it's a little bit easier when you're
and
really
that
struggling,
addict's
right?
fucking strong, man. Yeah, when you're right. weak. And those moments happen. That's when the fucking addict, as they say, been doing the push-ups in the closet. That's mm-hmm. when you're getting hit hard.
Right.
right? But right. man, it is a we program. We.
Right.
We can do this. What I couldn't.
Right.
I couldn't do it.
Right.
But we can.
Right.
And that's not just a saying. That's as real as it gets for me, at least in the NA world and the AA world. I went to AA meetings as well, but I needed right. a meeting. Meeting's a meeting's a meeting.
Yeah.
But I chose to go down the Narcotics Anonymous road it's been a great journey, and every day is just there isn't the struggles like it used to be.
Right.
You know, there's life shit that you got to deal with. Sure. That's fucking, you know, the way it is.
Yeah.
But
it does start smoothing out a little bit.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Big time. Yeah. That's the other part of on my clean date is once I put myself through the pain and everything, and then I start to think about the positives. Mm-hmm. And man, if you can imagine all the gifts of recovery I've had in the last 16 years of all. Right. And it's not just about all the trips and the, you know, I mean, the vacations and we bought another house and all the things that we have. For me, it's being the father, the husband,
yes,
the
right.
friend,
the relationships, yeah,
being that person, the person I guess I always wanted to be but didn't get a chance to be,
right?
Because the dope,
right?
I never got to know who Daryl really was.
Yeah,
right. Now I know who he is, and he's okay.
Right.
He's not all that, but he's okay.
Right, right.
You have to call my wife and see if she agrees. But
right,
I'm pretty sure
she's
amazing too. She doesn't go to the meetings and stuff, but she still has the same kind heart and supports everybody and loves everybody. And she did her step. She did her, you know what I mean? She's just...
Well, I think that's amazing too. And I think that's also another anomaly to your story is
very
that,
much.
You know, how many couples I've supported and one would be up and then the other one would drag the other one down. And then it's hard to do that in sync. And a lot of times I'd say, you guys got to go off and do your own.
That's recovery. Right.
So the fact that your guys' sober date is on, you know,
same
time and that you walk that same journey together. Yeah. That's pretty cool. That's a testament to the strength of that relationship.
It's really
for sure,
cool.
Right?
Yeah, that doesn't
happen every day.
We're two opposite peoples. Like I said, I'm the loud, can talk to anybody. She's the quiet, soft-spoken one, but she gets to the same place I get to at the same time, right? And I think it helps keep me in line because, you know, I could be a bit of a crazy one if I don't.
Right.
I'm probably the least mature person in my house. And I'm okay
with
that.
That's an okay thing, yeah.
I'll get old someday, Blake, but it ain't going to be today.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's great, man.
No, life is good, man. Life is good.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, I'm absolutely thrilled that you can come on. I think it's really fitting that you're the first person to come on this podcast. I couldn't think of a better person to come and chat.
Thank you, man.
Absolute joy to talk to. And it, you know, it's funny. I remember when we posted your recovery picture on and your quote on our social media, and it just absolutely lit up, and everyone has just so many great things to say about you. So like
the
community feels you know.
Thank
you know, I think you're making such a positive impression, and I totally get it now that I met you. I'm like, okay, I can see that.
You're someone
that people want to be around. So you know,
cool.
I appreciate you still
taking
the time to spread the word and all that. So
I enjoyed this. So thank you very much for having me on.
Cool. Well, thanks, man. Well, and hopefully see you again. And I think we can,
anytime.
Keep these chats going.
Anytime.
Right on. Thanks, man.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay. Bye.
Wow. What a guy. Thank you so much to Daryl for coming onto this program and really starting off season 3 in style. You know, what really made an impression on me was how candidly Daryl could speak about his really challenging times in his life and the place where his addiction took him. But doing so without the guilt and shame and remorse and regret that often accompanies these stories. You know, I really love that acceptance piece is there where, you know, as Daryl said, this is part of who he is and it's part of his story. And, you know, being able to accept, you know, the good with the bad. So I'm, you know, really, really grateful for him being able to share in the way he has. And, you know, also too, just amazed with Daryl's commitment to the program and to giving back to those that are starting and just in early recovery and the genuine you know, joy that he gets seeing people get it for the first time and really starting to stick with it and make that progress in their own recovery. I think that's great. So, you know, thank you, Daryl, not only for you know, coming onto this program and for your contribution to the recovery campaign this year, but also just for being such a role model and inspiration in our recovery community. And this really gets Comfortably and Numb off and running. We will be back, and every 2 weeks I will be coming out with new stories and new conversations with folks in recovery. And this is, like I said, a really great way to shed some light on the Recover campaign that took place in September. And then moving forward, always finding engaging individuals to speak to and to share their story. So please keep listening. And in the meantime, come on down and check out our new digs down 2675 Bridge Street and see what we have to offer and, you know, come say hi. In the meantime, please stay safe. And remember that recovery is possible. My name is Blake Anderson from the Umbrella Society. See you soon.